So, Craig, earlier today I read one of your recent columns, Where Matters Stand. And a question I have for you is, has traditional election fraud taken on a new character from the rise of Donald Trump as an alleged existential threat to the ruling establishment?
Yes, that's exactly what has happened. This differentiates the electoral fraud associated with Trump's runs for president from previous electoral frauds, because it's about more than just stealing an election. It's about getting rid of Trump and getting rid of the notion in the minds of American voters that there can be a candidate that challenges the ruling establishment instead of a candidate that serves the ruling establishment. So that's what is underway with Trump. They are establishing the fact that any presidential candidate, or for that matter, Senate or House of Representatives candidate, who claims to be on the side of the people against the establishment, that candidate will be displaced by one means or another.
Did some of his actions during his four-year term as the U.S. president reflect that he was an enemy of the establishment?
Well, I think it's more his statements. It was his campaign statements in 2016, for the 2016 election, that he would normalize relations with Russia, because this was a direct threat to the power and budget of the military security complex. When he made this threat, he threatened the CIA and the defense establishment in the same way that John F. Kennedy did in negotiating with Khrushchev to end the Cold War, and in the same way that President Nixon did with the SALT I agreement with Russia, and with going to China to end the conflict with China. You may remember that it was Nixon who declared the One China policy and replaced Taiwan as the country on the National Security Council with China. So just as John Kennedy and Nixon were seen as threats, Trump actually declared himself as a threat. And of course, he also threatened the establishment by saying that he was going to take power away from them and give it back to the people. So this was really unprecedented. And Nixon never formally challenged the establishment. He just said, we've got to wind down these tensions. We need more peace, more secure situation. And Kennedy, having experienced the near termination of life with the Cuban Missile Crisis, was working with Khrushchev to be sure that something like this didn't happen again. But even though they did not declare themselves to be enemies of the establishment, they were perceived that way. Well, Trump was not only perceived, but he declared himself openly. And that, of course, changed the dynamic dramatically.
If he is reelected, do you expect him to attempt to normalize relations with Russia, or would this simply be an impossibility?
Well, it may have gone too far. It would depend a great deal on the character of the people he's able to get appointed to his government. If he has a very supportive government and a very intelligent one, he might be able to do that. But he has now positioned himself, I think, in response to the Russiagate challenges, the insurrection challenges, the assertions by the director of the CIA that he was a traitor. I think he's positioned himself now as somebody who has to be tough on foreign enemies. And so it may well be he will bluster. And blustering is not the way you get diplomatic solutions. So I can't say he would attempt it or that he would be successful. I think he was blocked from his initial agenda and that they've now got him off task and they'll keep him off task. I think that's the more likely, but we don't know. We'll just have to see what happens.
What is some of the evidence that the establishment is targeting Trump?
Well, the recent assassination, in my view. Well, it was the long series of charges. You know, it began with Russiagate. Then there were two attempts to impeach him. They failed in the Senate, so he was never convicted. Then we had charges about the porn star that he had somehow interfered in the election by paying a porn star not to come forward and make charges. It was never established that the charges were correct, but it was just her chance to extort money in order for Trump to avoid a controversy. Well, so they made a big issue that that money should have been reported as a political campaign donation and not as a legal or business expense. Well, that's just an opinion. But the allocation was made by the accountants, not by Trump. So, and then we had the allegation that he had national security documents. And then we had the charges of insurrection. The claim was the January 6th Trump rally was really a plan for insurrection and a takeover of the government. Well, this is the most nonsense of all. But 1,000 Trump supporters who attended the rally are currently in prison. And they were imprisoned on the charge that they had participated in an insurrection.
Were they given lengthy prison sentences?
It depended on whether you self-incriminated or whether you went to trial. If you went to trial to defend yourself, they brought in an additional charge that had a 20-year sentence. But if you cooperated and didn't defend yourself and just entered a plea bargain, you avoided that lengthy charge and got a much shorter term. So people who didn't trust the criminal justice system, as it's called, and or didn't have the money to defend themselves, they self-incriminated and they got a very short sentence compared to the people who actually went to trial. So these were things that that they did in order to knock Trump out. Now, when all of that failed and it looked like he was running again, they turned some of these charges into criminal indictments. And then they brought a bunch of other civil indictments, and they have tried to block him even from being a candidate by keeping him tied up in numerous court cases. If they indict you, you have to defend yourself, even if the charge is ridiculous. So those are the ways. And now we have the appearance of some new attempts. The new attempts are that they are using media and social media to prepare the public to accept the theft of the election. They're doing this by putting out a lot of fake polls that show that the race between Trump and Kamala Harris is neck and neck, with Harris having large leads in the so-called swing states. Now, the purpose of these polls is to create in the public's mind that it is a very close race and that Kamala may very well win. Because if public has that perception, it becomes possible to steal the race. But in the case of Biden, he was so far behind, no one would have believed that he actually won. So that's one thing they're doing.
Didn't they also claim that Hillary Clinton, she was well ahead of Trump, and it was basically impossible for Trump to win the election?
Yes, and Hillary believed it herself. And so it's true, they believe that and were not prepared to lose control. Now, another way they're working against Trump is social media, like it's either YouTube or Facebook and Google. I think it was Facebook, maybe it was YouTube, but you know the iconic photograph of Trump with blood on his face and he raises his fist and says, fight, fight, fight. Well, now a social media site has ruled that this is a fake photo. And so when people try to use it, they're told that they're jeopardizing their access to social media.
Interesting. Our first podcast accumulated about 1,200 views within a few days, but subsequent to this apparent policy, it was reduced to 600. And now we're at about 800. How's that possible? That's really something. I heard about that in the past regarding other, say, controversial subjects. Even though our first podcast wasn't even controversial, we were just discussing various theories and the evidence.
Well, that's part of controlling the narrative, controlling perceptions. You see, another thing they're doing, someone posted evidence that if you Google Trump, up comes information about Kamala Harris. But if you Google Kamala Harris, up comes information about Kamala Harris. So that it looks like Google or someone there is interfering with the ability to use Google as a search engine to get information on Trump.
Right. They have been doing this for a long time, both Google and also other, say, competitors to Google like DuckDuckGo. When you search for, say, any subject outside the mainstream sphere, then you get all the mainstream hits from CNN, BBC. Anything that challenges the official narrative is buried by the search engines, and it's almost impossible to find it unless you know where to look.
That's right. And what it does is if someone sees a video or hears a podcast, it gets them to thinking and they want to learn more. They can't. You'd have to be a real expert to figure out how to navigate to find information that Google and Apple and the rest don't want you to find. And so this is a way that they box in Trump's ability to communicate with people, and they box in the ability of people to find out what might really be going on. So it's a controlled explanation that works for them. It's amazing, given their power, that Trump still has such a powerful support base.
So, Craig, if all the efforts fail and Trump is elected, will there be another assassination attempt, assuming that the first one was somehow orchestrated by the establishment? What do you think?
Well, it's highly likely. It would depend on his government and whether they make him acutely aware of that, and therefore somehow he pulls in his horns and presents as a more unifying figure than one who came to drain the swamp. If he persists in the perception that he's there to drain the swamp, this will maximize the likelihood of unofficial deep state assassination, because they really cannot afford to give up power. If they lose control, in other words, the skeletons in their closet, the murders, all the crimes, they're extremely vulnerable. So they have to stay in control, or else they have to be assured that Trump has given up on any effort to really expose them. So it really depends on who Trump's government is, how perceptive they are, whether they are fighters who are willing to take all the risk with Trump's life, or whether they are going to say, our reputations will also suffer if he's too hard-edged And we won't have a career in the establishment, but if we can modify him, if we can sort of make him more moderate and present him as a unifying figure, we can probably remove the assassination threat, and we'll also boost our own standing with the establishment. So I don't know that that won't happen, because I've often wondered where he's going to find a government full of fighters. Just because he seems to be one, that doesn't mean this is common among people who end up in Washington. And most of them find that they have to very quickly compromise just in order to exist in office. So I think this remains to be seen, and it'll be very interesting.
When you were in the Treasury, did the establishment try to influence monetary policy? Did you feel the push from the establishment to go in one direction? What can you tell us about that?
Well, the establishment was very much opposed to Reagan's economic policy, the financial establishment, because they didn't understand it, and they read it as an inflationary policy that would ruin their bond and stock portfolios. And the chairman of the Federal Reserve also saw it as inflationary, and that he would end up being blamed for the inflation that he thought the Reagan tax rate reductions would cause. You see, the financial establishment all thought of Reagan's policy in terms of the old Keynesian demand management. They couldn't get their minds around the supply side aspects. And so they simply saw it as a threat. And so they were trying to close us down from day one. And they had a lot of influence with David Stockman and Jim Baker. Stockman was the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and Jim Baker was George Herbert Walker Bush's right-hand man, serving as Ronald Reagan's chief of staff. So, yes, they very much wanted to prevent the program, and they used the media, and it was a knockdown, drag-out fight. What Don Regan and I both noted, we would get invited to all of these dinner parties, these Georgetown dinner parties that the establishment would hold. And what they wanted to do was to tell us how to run the Treasury. Now, I remember when Don Regan, who was the Treasury Secretary, he called me in his office one day and he said, "Craig, did you go to these dinner parties?" I knew what was coming. And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I'm not going to any more of them." He said, "All they want to do is tell me how to run the Treasury." Well, it was a mistake, because it cut him off from any possible support when they came after him. And they used the Iran-Contra affair that the neoconservatives had orchestrated to blame Don Regan. And of course, as he had not built his bases by going to dinner parties, he didn't have the protection he needed to weather that storm. So that's the way Washington really operates. You see what I'm saying? It's quite a difficult situation to be effective in.
You frequently refer to the establishment. What is the establishment? How do you define it?
Yeah, I think we call it the establishment, the deep state, because we don't know all the details. We know, of course, the CIA is part of it and all the security agencies. And we know, of course, that the powerful economic interests, the private economic interests, the military complex, the armaments companies, corporations, they're part of it. We know that Big Pharma is a part of it. We know that Wall Street, the financial center, is part of it. Agribusiness, the great, large, powerful economic interests are part of it. There are people who think that international elements that are part of it, some of them think the Rothschilds, the Bilderbergs, the World Economic Forum. Some people think these organizations, these groups, have some sort of control over the decision making in the United States. I don't know if that's possible. Don't know why the CIA would be content to be controlled by the Bilderbergers or by Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. So the fact that we don't really have a good solid picture is why we refer to it as the deep state, the ruling establishment, the ruling elite. It's the people with the influence, and that's generally the people with the money, because their money becomes campaign contributions that elect the president, the House, the Senate. And so these governmental institutions are responsive to those who provide the money that enable them to get into office and stay in office. So the assumption is that these groups are totally different from the voters, who don't provide very much of the money that candidates need to be elected and to stay in office. So that's why there's this notion of the split between the people and the real influence in governing or over government. And so we call on the deep state the ruling establishment.
This concludes this week's episode. Consider subscribing on paulcraigroberts.net to stay updated.